This is the Africa Debrief by Atlas News. Hello and welcome to the Africa Debrief by Atlas News, where we take an in-depth look at the region's top stories and analyze and explain them to you. Starting off, we turn our gaze to the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, where a recent attack on a gold mine has left at least 12 dead and reignited concerns about the ongoing conflict in the country's eastern provinces. On February 14th, the Cooperative for the Development of the Congo, CODECO, a notorious armed group, stormed a gold mine in Ituri province. This attack, despite a recent peace treaty signed by CODECO, raises crucial questions about the group's motivations, the historical context of the conflict, and the fragile peace in the region. But who exactly are CODECO? This group, formed in the 1970s as an agricultural cooperative, initially aimed to improve the lives of the Lendu people in Ituri. However, historical tensions with the Hema people, fueled by colonial favoritism and differing cultural practices, transformed CODECO into a loose association of Lendu militias during the brutal Ituri conflict of 1999 to 2003. Despite the conflict's end, CODECO never fully disarmed, and violence resurfaced in 2017 under the leadership of Justin Ngudjolo. Since then, CODECO has been responsible for numerous attacks, targeting civilians, particularly Hemas, and natural resource sites like gold mines. UN reports accuse them of massacres and crimes against humanity. The recent attack, just weeks after a peace treaty, highlights the group's fluid commitment to peace and the complex power dynamics at play. While CODECO claims to represent Lendu interests, critics argue they exploit ethnic tensions for personal gain. Additionally, the presence of other armed groups in the region, including Islamic militants, further complicates the picture. This incident underscores the fragility of peace in the DRC's eastern provinces. Years of conflict have left deep scars, and addressing the root causes like resource control, historical grievances, and lack of economic opportunities remains crucial. The recent attack serves as a stark reminder of the ongoing humanitarian crisis in the region, where millions remain displaced and lack access to basic necessities. As we move forward, understanding the historical context, the motivations of armed groups like CODECO, and the complex web of power struggles is essential. Only then can we begin to develop sustainable solutions that address the root causes of conflict and bring lasting peace to the people of the DRC. Staying in the DRC, we shift our focus to a recent event involving the M23 rebel group and the murky world of private military companies, PMCs, operating in the conflict-ridden region. On February 7th, near the town of Saki, M23 rebels ambushed a group of 20 Romanian citizens, killing two and injuring four. These individuals, later identified as Victor Rilean and Vasile Badea, were reportedly part of a larger contingent hired by a Romanian PMC company, Asociatia Ralph, to provide training and security services to the Congolese government. This incident brings to light several critical issues. The use of PMCs in conflict zones is a controversial topic, raising concerns about accountability, transparency, and potential fuel for further instability. Associatia Ralph, unlike many secretive PMCs, operates openly, advertising its services online. However, its involvement in the DRC, particularly its reported use of Goma's International Airport as a base, raises questions about its neutrality and potential entanglement in the conflict. The presence of PMCs in the DRC, the use of PMCs in conflict zones is a controversial topic, raising concerns about accountability, transparency, and potential fuel for further instability. Associatia Ralph, unlike many secretive PMCs, operates openly, advertising its services online. However, its involvement in the DRC, particularly its reported use of Goma's International Airport as a base, raises questions about its neutrality and potential entanglement in the conflict. The M23 rebels, engaged in an ongoing conflict with the DRC government, have released the identities of the slain Romanians, further blurring the lines of the conflict. Their motives remain unclear, whether targeting the individuals themselves, sending a message to the Congolese government, or manipulating the narrative to their advantage. This incident serves as another reminder of the ongoing instability and violence in the Eastern DRC. Years of conflict have left deep scars, and the presence of armed groups like the M23 and foreign actors like PMCs further complicates the search for lasting peace. Looking ahead, it's crucial to ask, what regulations are needed to govern the activities of PMCs in conflict zones like the DRC? How can transparency and accountability be ensured in such situations? What lasting solutions can be implemented to address the root causes of conflict in the DRC, ensuring peace and stability for its people? Next, we turn our attention to a concerning development in Zimbabwe, the declaration of a polio outbreak. This news highlights the ongoing challenges of vaccine-preventable diseases and the importance of global health cooperation. On February 20th, the Zimbabwean Ministry of Health confirmed the presence of a type 2 poliovirus variant in sewage samples from Harare and another province. This grim discovery, despite Zimbabwe's polio-free status since 2005, serves as a stark reminder of the virus's insidious nature and the need for constant vigilance. The detected virus likely originated from a mutated form of the weakened live virus used in oral polio vaccines, highlighting the complex challenges associated with this type of immunization. While highly effective, it carries a rare risk of mutation and potential outbreaks. Despite this setback, Zimbabwean authorities are taking swift action. A 2-round vaccination campaign targeting children under 10 is already underway, demonstrating their commitment to containing the outbreak. This campaign receives crucial support from regional health ministers, with Burundi, Malawi, Rwanda, Botswana, Mozambique, and Zambia joining forces to quell the spread across borders. The importance of global health cooperation. Collaborative efforts like the regional vaccination drive are essential to effectively combat infectious diseases that transcend borders. The need for continued vigilance. Even countries declared polio-free must remain vigilant, ensuring robust immunization programs and rapid response mechanisms. The challenges of vaccine hesitancy. Addressing vaccine hesitancy and ensuring equitable access to vaccinations remains crucial to achieving global health goals. As we move forward, it's vital to support the ongoing vaccination campaign in Zimbabwe and neighboring countries, as well as invest in research and development of safer and more effective polio vaccines and combat misinformation, and promote vaccine confidence through community engagement. The fight against polio is far from over. The Zimbabwean outbreak serves as a stark reminder of the fragility of progress and the importance of collective action. Now returning to the DRC, we focus on a recent U.S. State Department statement accusing Rwanda of supporting the M23 rebel group, raising concerns about rising tensions and the potential for further instability in the region. On February 18th, a press release by the U.S. Department of State bluntly condemned Rwanda's alleged backing of the M23 rebels. This statement, titled "Escalation of Hostilities in Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo," holds M23 responsible for worsening violence, including their recent incursions into Saki, and calls upon them to cease hostilities and withdraw from their positions. Furthermore, the statement directly condemns Rwanda's support for M23, demanding the withdrawal of Rwandan Defense Force personnel and surface-to-air missile systems from the DRC. This accusation comes amidst reports of such missile systems being spotted in the region, further fueling concerns about Rwanda's involvement. The M23 rebellion, primarily composed of ethnic Tutsis, has been making significant gains in recent weeks, particularly in North Kivu province. This has sparked fears of Goma, the provincial capital, being captured. While M23 claims their actions are defensive, the Congolese government adamantly denies this, accusing them of being a Rwandan puppet. Peace talks have repeatedly failed, highlighting the deep-seated animosity between the two nations. The DRC accuses Rwanda of supporting M23, while Rwanda denies any involvement. This finger-pointing further complicates the already fragile situation and hinders progress towards a peaceful resolution. The escalation of hostilities has had devastating consequences for civilians caught in the crossfire. Tens of thousands have been internally displaced, facing immense hardships and uncertainty. The ill-equipped intervention force led by South Africa appears insufficient to address the growing threat posed by M23, raising further concerns about the future of the region. The U.S. State Department statement urges all parties to respect sovereignty and territorial integrity and hold accountable those responsible for human rights abuses. It further calls for continued regional diplomatic efforts to de-escalate the conflict and create conditions for lasting peace. This complex situation requires careful analysis and nuanced understanding. Stay tuned for further insights, expert perspectives, and discussions on how we can collectively advocate for peaceful solutions and support the people affected by this ongoing conflict. Next, we unpack the recent court ruling requiring the African National Congress, ANC, to hand over 11 years of cadre deployment records to the Democratic Alliance, DA. This decision has sparked heated debate, raising questions about transparency, accountability, and the potential implications for the nation's future. Cadre deployment is a policy implemented by the ANC where party members are appointed to key positions in government and state institutions, often based on loyalty and political affiliation rather than merit or experience. This practice has been heavily criticized for its potential to undermine public trust, exacerbate corruption, and weaken the impartiality of state institutions. Following a 3-year legal battle initiated by the DA, the South African courts ruled in favor of transparency. The ANC is now obligated to disclose internal documents, including meeting minutes, emails, and CVs, dating back to 2013, when President Cyril Ramaphosa chaired the Cadre Deployment Committee. The DA views this as a landmark victory in their fight against determined lawfare, a term used to describe the ANC's alleged use of legal challenges to silence opposition. The party believes accessing these records will expose the extent to which cadre deployment has contributed to state capture and service delivery failures, such as load shedding and water shortages. The ANC has expressed reservations about the ruling, arguing that it could compromise party confidentiality and internal decision-making processes. However, they have indicated their intention to comply with the court order. While the release of these records promises greater transparency, its impact remains uncertain. Some believe it could lead to accountability measures and reforms within the ANC, while others fear it could be used for political attacks and further polarization. Moving on, we turn our attention to a disturbing case in Nigeria, where the closure of an orphanage in Abuja raises concerns about child trafficking and the desperate need for improved child protection measures. On February 19th, Nigerian authorities shut down the Karon Majiji village's priesthood orphanage in Abuja. This action followed the discovery of 23 children, aged 1 to 14, believed to be trafficked from Plateau State. Some children had resided there since 2019, highlighting the gravity of the situation. Reports describe the facility as unfit for children, with overcrowded and unhygienic sleeping arrangements. This raises serious questions about the care provided and the potential exploitation of these vulnerable individuals. Fortunately, authorities intervened, ensuring the children's safety and initiating their return to their families through the Plateau Commissioner for Women Affairs. While the specific circumstances of this incident remain under investigation, it shines a spotlight on the broader issue of child trafficking in Nigeria. The Women Consortium of Nigeria emphasizes the prevalence of internal trafficking, often involving children lured from rural areas to urban centers for exploitative labor or even prostitution. This case serves as a stark reminder of the urgent need for stricter regulations and robust systems to safeguard children from such dangers. thorough investigations into the Karen Majiji Village case and any potential trafficking networks are essential to hold perpetrators accountable and prevent future occurrences. Strengthening regulations and oversight mechanisms for orphanages is crucial to ensure the safety and well-being of children entrusted to their care. Raising awareness in communities about the dangers of child trafficking and empowering them to report suspicious activities is vital in tackling this issue at its root. Ensuring proper rehabilitation and reintegration support for rescued children is critical to help them heal and rebuild their lives. Next, we cast our anchor in Guinea, where the recent dissolution of the government by the ruling military junta has sent ripples of speculation and uncertainty through the nation. On February 19th, the Guinean government, led by interim Prime Minister Bernard Goumou, was abruptly dissolved by President Mamadi Doumbouya's military junta. This unexpected move, announced by Secretary General of the Presidency Amara Kamara, left the country wondering about the reasons behind it and its potential implications. Since seizing power in a coup in 2021, the junta has been under pressure from the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, to establish a timeline for transitioning back to civilian rule. In October 2022, a 24-month transition was agreed upon, but its exact commencement remained unclear. While the junta hasn't provided reasons for the dissolution, several interpretations emerge. This move could be a signal of the junta's readiness to initiate the agreed-upon transition, potentially separating itself from the day-to-day governance and paving the way for elections. The dissolution might reflect internal disagreements within the junta, with Doumbouya aiming to consolidate power before allowing for a broader transition process. It's also possible that this action is a calculated move to gain concessions from regional and international actors, potentially seeking increased financial aid or a longer transition period. The coming days and weeks will be crucial in determining the true motivations and consequences of this decision. Key questions remain. Will the junta announce a concrete timeline for elections and stick to it? What role will the dissolved government officials play in the transition process? How will the international community react to this development? Now we dive into the complex political landscape of Tunisia. Today we focus on the recent hunger strike declared by imprisoned opposition leader Rached Ghannouchi, highlighting the escalating tensions and uncertainties surrounding the upcoming presidential elections. The 82-year-old leader of the Ennahda Party, a key opposition force, announced his hunger strike in solidarity with six other detained political figures. This act of protest underscores the deepening political divides and concerns about the fairness and transparency of the upcoming elections scheduled for November. Ghannouchi faces charges of plotting against state security and incitement against police, accusations dismissed by his supporters as politically motivated. His recent sentencing for accepting foreign funding adds another layer to the already tense political climate. While protesting his imprisonment, Ghannouchi emphasizes the importance of upholding democratic principles, freedom, and judicial independence. This echoes the concerns of many Tunisians who fear an erosion of democratic institutions under President Saied's government. President Saied, initially seen as a reformist, has faced criticism for his consolidation of power. Dissolving the parliament, freezing the constitution, and introducing a new electoral system have triggered accusations of authoritarianism. The recent parliamentary elections witnessed a historically low voter turnout, indicating widespread disillusionment with the political process. This apathy poses a significant challenge to the legitimacy and stability of the upcoming presidential election. With Ghannouchi's hunger strike raising the stakes and the November elections approaching, Tunisia stands at a critical juncture. Key questions remain. Will the hunger strike lead to any concessions or dialogue between the government and opposition? Can the upcoming elections be truly free and fair amidst the current political climate? Will Tunisians overcome their apathy and actively engage in the electoral process? Finally, we're heading to the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, where a recent resignation has sparked a government reshuffle with intriguing implications. The news cycle is buzzing with the resignation of Prime Minister Jean-Michel Sama Lukonde, prompting the dissolution of the entire DRC government. This might sound chaotic, but hold on. There's more to it than meets the eye. It all boils down to Congolese law, which prohibits individuals from simultaneously holding positions as both a member of parliament and a government minister. Lukonde, appointed PM in 2021, found himself in this very situation after winning a seat in the December 2023 elections. So he chose to honor the law and focus on his parliamentary duties. While Lukonde and his cabinet have stepped down, President Felix Tshisekedi has thrown a curveball. He's requested Lukonde to stay on as a caretaker PM, managing essential affairs until a new government is formed. This temporary leadership comes with some limitations, like restrictions on hiring, spending, and travel, to ensure smooth continuity. Lukonde isn't alone in this dance between parliament and government. 39 other ministers face the same legal hurdle, and several have already resigned to focus on parliament. As President Tshisekedi assembles his new team for his second term, it's likely he'll tap into this pool of MPs, including those who held dual positions previously. They'll just have to step down from parliament to return to the cabinet. The key unknowns are the time frame and makeup of the new government. With presidential and parliamentary terms lasting 5 years, both Tshisekedi and the newly elected MPs have a long runway ahead. The president's coalition might see some familiar faces returning to ministerial roles, but the exact composition remains to be seen. So the DRC's government is undergoing a temporary shuffle, but the core structure remains intact. President Tshisekedi holds the reins as he navigates the legal requirements and political alliances to form a new cabinet. We'll be keeping a close eye on developments in the DRC, and we'll be back soon with further analysis as the new government takes shape. Stay tuned. This has been the Africa Debrief by Atlas News. Thank you for listening.